wants to know why. And her mother hears the churning complexities that live inside that question. Why? Why suffering? Why do some people have food and others have none? Why do some people die of cancer while others survive? Why do children get stung by bees? Infuriating as it is, we cannot answer the little girl's question in a satisfying way. We could turn to history, statistics, sociology, economics, to show how inequality was created. The medical field can tell us about cells multiplying and tumors forming. And an entomologist can tell us how bees respond when they feel threatened. Still, though, we have yet to find the answer to the larger why behind suffering. The answer that would satisfy our deepest existential searching and reveal so much of what is hidden behind the curtain of mystery. The world was made gorgeous, tender, broken, dangerous. We know not why. But over thousands of years, human beings have learned a response, if not an answer. The response to suffering in the world is kindness. Kindness is the salve that soothes the part of life that stings. When we hear the word kindness, it can sound like a simple and cheerful thing. But being kind takes grit. Learning to practice kindness is a discipline, and as with all discipline, it requires intention, and is easier to admire in others than engage in ourselves. But the good news is that we can start small. Have you ever been eating lunch with someone to look up to find that they have a big piece of spinach in their teeth? In my experience, it seems like the person with the spinach in their teeth is always in the middle of this elaborate setup to a joke that they're just dying to tell, or they're in the midst of sharing something tender and difficult to say out loud. And there I am, sitting across the table, missing most of what they're saying because I'm doing the social math in my head and trying to decide what to do. Should I tell them? No, then it'll seem like I'm not interested in their joke or I wasn't listening to their story. They'd just be embarrassed. And maybe when they get home and look in the mirror, they can have the comfort of thinking, oh, good, I guess no one noticed because no one said anything. It is deep in my wiring to be nice and pretend that awkward things aren't happening. But even I know that it's one thing to stop at my initial impulse to be nice, and it's another to dig deeper into intention, even a spiritual discipline that is being kind. Kindness has an edge to it. Kindness lives in the tension between truth and compassion, conscience, and love. When we're kind, it's because we have somehow balanced gentle intention and strong conviction. I happen to very much enjoy when someone is polite and opens a door for me, or asks how my day is. It makes me feel comfortable and welcome. But for most of us, we aren't risking all that much when we automatically, without a lot of thought, ask if someone is having a good day. It doesn't mean that it's not important to do or nice. But as Naomi Shihab Nye says, we must learn the tender gravity of kindness. My friend who goes home to discover that she has spinach in her teeth experiences a tiny moment of embarrassment, a fleeting sense of loneliness, realizing that many people saw this and didn't say anything, as if sharing an inside joke at her expense. Even when we do something as small as telling someone that they have spinach in their teeth, there is more courage and vitality in that than in preserving our own comfort and risking nothing, telling ourselves we're just being nice. Kindness is making ourselves vulnerable as we reach out to meet the vulnerability of another. Kindness means taking a risk that acknowledges our shared humanity. Kindness demands something more of us than just being nice. That's why practicing kindness eventually takes us into more complicated territory than spinach and teeth scenarios. For example, what does it mean to be kind when someone we love is suffering from addiction? When we see them drinking or using so much that they seem detached from their own core, drifting away from all that mattered to them once. Kindness has a backbone. If we want our loved one to begin or try yet again to walk the bleak and dangerous path recovery can be, we have to name what is excruciating to name. You are not okay. You are not yourself. You're hurting people. This can't continue. It's hard enough to break through the barriers of pretending that nothing is happening, to speak a painful truth that nevertheless needs to be spoken. But kindness demands more than saying what everyone else is afraid to say. Kindness means admitting our connectedness, admitting that we are kindred. It's hard enough speaking truth to denial when a loved one is suffering from addiction, but kindness means searching inside ourselves to find a jagged edge, some part of us that is incomplete, that feels empty or lonely or broken, and sitting with whatever is sad or messy within ourselves and offering our own incompleteness as we reach out to theirs. Not a judgment delivered from on high. Not only saying, you're a mess, you need help, but admitting how deeply this pain is connected to ours. Realizing that we will not feel whole until they do. What does it mean to be kind when someone has been diagnosed with cancer? All the words that come to mind and feel like nice things to say can't be that bad. Well, all you can do is keep going. You'll find a treatment that works. Don't worry. Kindness would mean pushing away from the shore of our own comfort, our own need to make everything okay, and plunging with them, even if just for a moment, into the deep end of reality. A reality where food tastes like ash. Nausea is unrelenting. And it's so hard to focus that even reading a familiar book doesn't bring much ease. When someone we know is battling cancer, kindness demands that we go to the honest, difficult places with them so they don't have to be there alone. And then, standing on the same ground, admitting our deep connectedness, there is suddenly room for laughter, even goofiness, and not making everything about cancer. Only then there is plenty of room to be fully human together. That is the tender gravity of kindness. Because we live in a chaotic and troubling time, because there is illness and poverty, because children are stung by bees, we need kindness. As Shihab Nye reminds us, it is only when we have caught the thread of all sorrows and seen the size of the cloth, only when we see how we are bound together in the experience of being human, only then can we understand kindness as the truest response, the only thing that makes sense anymore. There's a lot of power in our connectedness, in our shared humanity. We sense this even when we come into contact with strangers. Sometimes when you accidentally make eye contact through a window or passing each other in the grocery store, you almost blush and hurriedly look away. Because we sense the power of our connectedness and we're startled by brushing up against the sacred in such a mundane setting. So imagine the intensity of our connectedness with people we know well and love. Perhaps this is why we sometimes avoid being deeply present. It's easier to scroll through articles on our phone and check off items on our to-do list than it is to make ourselves vulnerable enough to reach out toward the vulnerability of others, taking a risk that acknowledges our shared humanity. We must be devoted to our connectedness before we know what it means to be kind. Recognize our own experience in the suffering of others. Root ourselves in that place where truth finds compassion and conscience meets love. Then and only then can we practice kindness. The world was made gorgeous, tender, broken, dangerous. We know not why. How shall we live in it, you and I and everyone? Blessed be. Amen.